Today is Monday, the 18th of May, and this is the World Socialist website. After Trump's China trip, White House plans new attack on Iran, by Andre Damon. Just 2 days after US President Donald Trump's return from Beijing, the White House is making active preparations for a renewed onslaught against Iran. The New York Times reported Friday that the United States and Israel are, quote, engaged in intense preparations, the largest since the ceasefire took effect, for the possible resumption of attacks against Iran as early as next week, end quote. Trump's state visit to Beijing, the first by an American president to China in nearly a decade, was dominated by the crisis triggered by the war on Iran. Despite a public show of goodwill between Trump and Chinese Chairman Xi Jinping, no public agreement was reached on the resolution of the Iran crisis and no official communique was issued. Despite the massacre of more than 3,000 Iranians and the destruction of 81,000 civilian structures, the United States has achieved none of its goals. It has neither overthrown the Iranian government, nor broken Iran's military, nor gained control over the Strait of Hormuz. On Sunday, Axios reported that Trump is expected to convene his top national security team in the Situation Room on Tuesday to discuss restarting combat operations. The meeting follows a Saturday session at Trump's Virginia Golf Club, attended by Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, CIA Director John Ratcliffe, and Middle East Envoy Steve Witkoff. Sunday evening, after a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Trump posted on Truth Social, quote, "For Iran, the clock is ticking, and they better get moving, fast, or there won't be anything left of them," end quote. He followed with an AI-generated image of a map of the Middle East overlaid with the American flag, with red arrows pointing at Iran from every direction, hinting at a US ground invasion of Iran. Trump had earlier posted an image of himself pressing a red button on a command console, with mushroom cloud explosions shown on an overhead screen, in the latest signal that he is considering the use of nuclear weapons in Iran. According to the Times account, the Pentagon options under consideration include the deployment of US troops inside Iran, which, quote, "would come with big risks of casualties," end quote. In escalating the Iran war, Trump speaks not only for himself, but for the entire financial oligarchy. Having launched the war, Trump has staked the prestige of American imperialism on subjugating Iran. Failure to achieve that aim is seen by the ruling class as a catastrophe that would accelerate the collapse of the dollar-denominated financial order, on which American capitalism solvency depends. Dominant sections of the US media are openly agitating for a US ground invasion of Iran. In a Sunday op-ed published in the Wall Street Journal titled "How to Finish the Job in Iran," Seth Cropsey, a former Deputy Undersecretary of the Navy in the Reagan and George H.W. Bush administrations, wrote that Trump must, quote, "follow through on the threat of catastrophic force. That means preparing for a multi-stage operation, including boots on the ground, that forcibly reopens the Strait of Hormuz to accelerate the collapse of the Iranian state," end quote. Cropsey pointed to the desperate crisis facing US imperialism. Quote, "If oil remains around $150 a barrel for the rest of the year, inflation will accelerate, while key industries see their supply chains derailed. Mr. Trump has a narrow window in which to end this crisis favorably, reopen the Strait of Hormuz, and ensure an economic rebound while securing American interests and prestige. But that requires deploying the full spectrum of American power," end quote. The push for renewed strikes continued on the Sunday talk shows. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina Trump's most prominent foreign policy ally, in an appearance on Meet the Press, called for the United States to resume bombing Iran's energy infrastructure. Quote, "What President Trump has done has been amazing militarily," Graham said. Quote, "But there are still more targets to be had, and there's things we can do to hurt. The energy infrastructure is their soft underbelly. If you go back to the fight, I'd put energy on top of the list." End quote. The Democratic Party offered no opposition to the planned escalation. Instead, the Democrats, who appeared on the Sunday talk shows, largely devoted their foreign policy remarks to condemning what they considered an insufficiently belligerent posture by Trump toward China at the Beijing summit. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer declared, quote, "For the sake of democracy and the stability of the global economy, Trump must not sell out Taiwan," end quote. The Democrats' complaint is that the war Trump launched against Iran has distracted the United States from the conflict with China. The war against Iran is at the same time a war against the American working class. The inflationary crisis triggered by the war has produced a massive surge in the cost of energy and food. NBC News reported that fresh vegetable prices have risen more than 44% on an annualized basis over the past 3 months. Gas is at a national average of $4.51 a gallon, and Brent crude has jumped roughly 50% since the start of the war. Responding to the disastrous increase in the cost of living, Trump told reporters at the White House this month, quote, "I don't think about Americans' financial situation," end quote. The administration has made the connection between war abroad and the assault on social programs at home explicit. At a White House Easter luncheon on April 1, Trump declared, quote, "It's not possible for us to take care of daycare, Medicaid, Medicare, all these individual things. We have to take care of one thing, military protection. We're fighting wars," he said. The costs of the war are mounting on the Treasury as well. Pentagon Comptroller Jay Hurst conceded at congressional testimony last week that the war had cost $29 billion, a figure that excludes damage to American bases. Harvard public policy economist Linda Bilmes told Fortune in April that she was, quote, "certain we will spend $1 trillion for the Iran war," end quote. The escalation of the war on Iran comes amid a major upsurge of the class struggle. Some 3,500 Long Island Railroad workers walked off the job at midnight Friday, shutting down the busiest commuter line in the United States in the first LIRR strike since 1994. The 1,300 United Auto Workers members at Nextier Automotive in Saginaw, Michigan, have twice rejected concessionary contracts in the past 6 weeks and are pressing the union for an immediate strike. The 1,000 UAW members at American Axle's Three Rivers, Michigan plant voted by 98% on May 12 to authorize a strike when their contract expires on May 31. The immediate trigger of these struggles is the cost of living crisis created by the war. The defense of workers' living standards cannot be separated from the fight against the war. Trump's threats to annihilate Iranian society must be treated with the utmost seriousness. The administration is a criminal, gangster regime that will stop at nothing, including the use of nuclear weapons, to advance the interests of the American ruling class. The struggles in transit and in the auto industry show the way forward in the fight against Trump's schemes for war and dictatorship. The murderous Trump regime and its enablers in the Democratic Party must be opposed through the method of class struggle and the program of socialism. Long Island Railroad Workers' Strike. Mamdani Supports Scabbing Operations, by Tom Hall and Daniel DeVries. Around 3,500 workers on the Long Island Railroad, the largest commuter rail in the United States, launched a strike Saturday morning for the first time in 32 years. The strike coincided with the expiration of a contract for 40,000 subway and bus workers in New York City's transit system in Transport Workers Union Local 100. The strike is a major political confrontation in the centre of world finance, pitting workers against Wall Street and its political agents, above all, the Democratic Party. It raises the question, who runs New York, the financial oligarchy or the working class? Workers are striking against intolerable conditions. Quote, by the time you look, a $1,000 check just dropped down to almost $300 for a company or organisation that's making billions of dollars, station worker Kristen told the WSWS about runaway living expenses. Quote, it's unfair in one of the richest cities in the world, end quote. The cost of living has forced her to relocate. Quote, I had to move to another state, which is New Jersey, in order to still be able to be above water, end quote. Kristen also described the humiliating conditions attached to sick leave. Each of the 12 annual days requires a doctor's note, a $30 copay, and submission within 72 hours, on penalty of points and possible suspension. Quote, if we go on maternity leave, sometimes that takes 6 to 8 weeks. If we use up those 12 days, we're not getting paid the remainder. It's a lot of unfairness. It's a lot of injustice. End quote. Reggie, a New York City transit conductor with 20 years on the job, told the WSWS that wages have never kept pace with the cost of living. Quote, I don't feel like I'm middle class anymore, he said. I feel like it's either lower class or high income earners. End quote. He described being required to report in snowstorms and severe weather with no hazard pay. Quote, they consider us essential workers when they want us to come to work, in any condition. But to pay us, they don't pay us like essential workers. End quote. The Metropolitan Transit Authority, which operates the LIRR and the New York City subway and bus system, is responding ruthlessly, threatening to fire probationary workers if they take part in the strike. It is also attempting to break the strike using city buses. MTA bus drivers in the Transport Workers Union must reject this attempt to force them to scab on the strike. Not only does this undermine their own contract struggle, it violates the principle that, quote, an injury to one is an injury to all, and allows management to divide and conquer. Significantly, the TWU has not released an official statement opposing the strike-breaking operation. Transit workers who have a long history of militant struggle must halt the strike-breaking operation and launch their own strike, linking with LIRR workers in a common fight to win the demands of all MTA workers. Winning the strike requires the support of the whole working class. City workers must rally behind the strike and prepare joint actions. Rank-and-file committees must be built uniting LIRR workers with workers in transit and other sectors, developing into a broader movement, fighting for the redistribution of the oligarchy's wealth and funding for affordable housing and other pressing social needs. That political energy exists. Over 1 million New Yorkers voted for Zoran Mamdani for mayor, a candidate calling himself a socialist, because of their deep hatred of inequality and capitalism. But Mamdani is actively collaborating with pro-business governor Kathy Hochul on a strike-breaking operation, without offering even verbal support for the striking workers. His only public statement directed positive attention to the MTA's strike-breaking shuttle buses. Quote, City Hall and agencies across the administration are actively coordinating preparedness and contingency efforts to help maintain continuity for commuters and support New Yorkers as conditions evolve. The MTA has announced that limited weekday bus service will be available for essential workers and others who cannot telecommute, end quote. Mamdani and the political establishment do not care about essential workers. What they fear is that a joint LIRR New York City transit strike would encourage a broader movement of workers against the corporate and financial elite. Mamdani's statement follows the abandonment of his free bus fare proposal, continuous meetings with Wall Street executives, and visits to Trump's White House to reassure corporate America. He has kept billionaire heiress Jessica Tisch as NYPD commissioner, oversaw the arrest of 13 striking nurses in January, and worked with ICE to carry out raids in hospitals and other parts of the city. Last week, Mamdani reached a $4 billion agreement with Hochul to close the city's budget deficit, primarily through suspending pension payments and mandating smaller school class sizes. A fig leaf pied-à-terre tax on secondary residences of the wealthy was included to allow him to save face. Mamdani called his collaboration with Hochul a model, where he endorsed her re-election in February. Hochul, for her part, has declared the strike reckless and denounced LIRR workers. Quote, "These unions represent the highest paid workers of any railroad in the nation, yet they are demanding contracts that could raise fares as much as 8%, pit workers against one another, and risk tax hikes for Long Islanders," end quote. The claim that decent pay must be offset at riders' expense is absurd. The MTA pays around 15% of its entire operating budget, servicing $49 billion in bond debt, the largest positions held by BlackRock, Vanguard, and Fidelity. Wall Street bonuses alone reached a record $49.2 billion last year. Cancellation of this debt would be the first step toward providing free transit to commuters. A train cleaner at the Hudson Yards subway station captured the connection between the strike and the broader conditions facing workers across the city. Quote, "All of us face the same problem. Workers on trains, buses, city workers," he told the WSWS. "They want to slash our conditions. If we do not unite, it will get worse," end quote. He continued, quote, "We have no business being at war in the Strait of Hormuz. War is started for those who have the money, but it affects construction, nursing, hospitals. They are fighting for resources across the planet," end quote. Workers must fight for the redirection of Wall Street profits, not a marginal tax tweak, but the requisitioning of oligarchic wealth to pay for wages, free transit, housing and infrastructure. Every attempt to pit workers against the riding public must be rejected. Quote, "I think it could work," Reggie said. Quote, "If the people stick to the agenda and we don't give in, no matter what," end quote. In fighting for these urgent demands, workers are coming into direct conflict with a capitalist political system that treats the fortunes of the oligarchy as inviolable and deploys its laws, parties and institutions to defend them. The state's infamous Taylor Law bans all strike by public employees, including MTA workers, and its threat is likely to be used by politicians and union bureaucrats to frog march shuttle bus drivers into scabbing on the LIRR strike. LIRR workers themselves fall under the separate Federal Railway Labour Act, a century-old law designed to prevent the powerful national rail strikes that shook American capitalism in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Victory requires that workers establish their own initiative, independent of the union bureaucracy, which is integrated with the political establishment at every level. Workers must be on guard against any attempt by the bureaucracy to shut the strike down before their demands have been met, as happened when officials ended a three-day NJ Transit strike last May. The LIRR strike took place only after the union bureaucracy twice blocked strikes by appealing to Trump to impose legally binding mediation under the Railway Labour Act. The same unions worked to delay a national rail strike in 2022 until Congress had time to impose a contract. As for the Transport Workers Union, its international president, John Samuelson, sat on Mamdani's transition team, while TWU Local 100 endorsed Hochul for governor in 2022. In 2008, following the use of the Taylor Law against workers in the 2005 strike, the union signed away workers' right to strike in order to restore $1.5 million a month in automatic dues checkoff. The strike can be won, but it depends on the degree of unity workers can build and their ability to act against interference from the union bureaucracy and the state. Transit workers have a long history of defying anti-strike laws, which have always been deployed against every attempt to win fundamental rights, including in 1966, 1980, and 2005. Transit workers also have a rich tradition of anti-capitalist politics, including Trotskyist transit workers Ed Wynne and Edwin Soto. In 1980, Ed Wynne was the only member of the TWU Local 100 Executive Board to oppose the union's premature shutdown of the strike at the point where Mayor Ed Koch was on the verge of surrender. The rebellion against the apparatus must take the form of rank-and-file committees at every depot, line and station, uniting workers across the transit system and drawing in support from nurses, teachers, municipal workers and riders. The TWU bus drivers must refuse to operate scab shuttles. These committees must fight for immediate, substantial wage increases with full cost of living allowance, the elimination of all inferior pension tiers, two-person crews on all passenger trains, and free transit for all, paid for through the cancellation of the MTA's $49 billion bond debt, redirecting funds currently extracted by Wall Street bondholders to improved wages and fare reductions. Workers must also prepare a political fight against the Railway Labour Act and the Taylor Law as instruments of class rule. We urge LIRR and transit workers to contact the WSWS and the International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, IWARFC, for information on forming rank and file committees. Science magazine investigates FBI's witch hunt against Chinese researchers by Stephen St. Clair. Science magazine, one of the most prestigious peer-reviewed publications in the world, has published an investigative report titled Researching While Chinese, detailing the Department of Justice, DOJ, persecution of Chinese researchers at the University of Michigan, UM, and Indiana University, IU. The report names the FBI operative at the center of every prosecution and exposes retaliation against IU professor Roger Innes, a leading American plant biologist. This witch hunt has its roots in the China Initiative, launched by the DOJ during the first Trump administration in 2018, nominally to counter Chinese espionage and theft of trade secrets. The China Initiative targeted primarily senior faculty with established careers and institutional standing. It produced a string of prosecutions that collapsed under scrutiny. The case against MIT professor Gang Chen was dismissed in 2022 after the government's charges proved baseless. Harvard chemistry chair Charles Lieber was convicted not of espionage, but of lying to federal investigators about a modest research relationship. University of Kansas professor Franklin Tao was convicted on concocted evidence. The science investigation documents the second phase of this campaign, where the China Initiative targeted senior faculty, making prosecution difficult and politically costly. The current FBI campaign has shifted its focus to junior researchers, postdoctoral fellows and graduate students on temporary visas. These individuals have no tenure, no institutional protection, and no citizenship rights that could complicate their removal. The campaign has been driven from the top by fascist political operatives of the Trump administration. Former Attorney General Pam Bondi and FBI Director Kash Patel have publicly advanced the narrative of widespread Chinese sabotage and espionage in US universities. Patel, in particular, sought to stoke anti-Chinese hysteria with inflammatory social media posts and statements framing routine scientific exchange as a national security threat. This is a political operation against immigrants and Chinese scholars, an assault on democratic rights, an effort to whip up national chauvinism and racism. It is part of the erection of a presidential dictatorship and the preparations for war against China, a nuclear power. Since June 2025, six young scientists have been prosecuted on felony charges of smuggling and conspiracy, carrying 25 years in prison for mislabeling shipments of non-hazardous biological material. In ordinary circumstances, this administrative violation would draw a fine or a warning email from the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA. The Science article names Special Agent Edward Nier as the lead investigator. He is assigned to the Detroit Field Officers Counterintelligence Division. The article traces the current wave of prosecutions back to July 27, 2024, when Zhang Yongliu, the boyfriend of the UN postdoc Yongqin Jian, was stopped at Detroit Metropolitan Airport carrying samples of Fusarium graminearum, a fungus that causes head blight in wheat and barley, and was the subject of their research. Liu was denied entry and returned to China. The FBI confiscated his phone and found exchanges implicating Jian. On February 5, 2025, Nie interviewed Jian and seized her phone, finding a conversation in which she had asked a colleague to send her plasmid DNA, material US Customs had already intercepted and destroyed. Jian was held for 5 months before being coerced into a guilty plea, sentenced to time served, and deported. UM doctoral student Cheng Jian Han was arrested a week after Jian and held for 3 months before entering a no-contest plea and being deported. Postdocs Zhu Bei, Fengfan Zhang, and Ziyong Zhang were fired by UM, stripped of their visas, arrested and held for over 3 months until the government abruptly moved to dismiss all charges on February 4, 2026, days before trial. Postdoc Yuhuang Zhang at IU was held for almost 5 months, sentenced to time served, and deported. Neurobiologist XZ, or Sean Zhu, a senior faculty member at the University of Michigan whose laboratory employed Han, Bei, F. Zhang, and Z. Zhang, has left the United States and relocated his lab to Huazhong University of Science and Technology in China. Zhu was not charged with any crime. The science investigation documents a retaliation against IU professor Roger Innes, a distinguished plant biologist recently elected to the National Academy of Sciences, after he wrote an expert letter defending Yongqin Jian. Innes stated in the letter that the Fusarium graminearum strain at issue, quote, did not present any appreciable danger of infestation or disease, let alone a significant risk, end quote, and noted that the researchers likely wanted access to a specialized microscope available at the UM lab. 1 week after Jian was sentenced in November 2025, the FBI's Detroit office notified the Indianapolis office about, quote, shipments from the PRC to individuals at IU whose research focused on pathogen resistance and susceptibility in wheat, end quote, the same field as Jian and Liu. Innes' postdoc, Yuhuang Zhang, was arrested on November 25. Quote, why would Innes be on the Michigan FBI's radar except for that letter? Jian's lawyer, David Duncan, asked. Quote, there is no other connection, end quote. In December 2025, FBI agents searched Innes' lab and confiscated a notebook containing seeds of Arabidopsis thaliana because, Innes told Science, quote, there was some Chinese writing in the notebook, end quote. He had received the seed packet from a Chinese colleague in 2018 and never opened it. In February 2026, the USDA issued a letter stating his lab was in compliance with federal regulations and then cancelled a long-running research collaboration aimed at combating Fusarium head blight. In early April, the day after Zhang was sentenced, IU's Public Safety Office ordered Innes to, quote, cease all importing and exporting activities in connection with your research effective immediately, end quote. 3 weeks later, the USDA informed Innes that the compliance letter had been sent in error. On May 7, IU locked him out of his laboratory entirely. As of May 14, IU had announced a partial measure, temporary barriers around the Innes lab, theoretically allowing researchers in adjacent spaces to re-enter, while shared offices, equipment, refrigerators and freezers remained inaccessible. Biology Department Chair Armin Mocek noted that, quote, if the goal was to restore functionality to these two labs, that goal has yet to be accomplished, end quote. It must be noted that the Science article, for all its detail, does not mention the suicide of Dunhao Wang, a 30-year-old postdoctoral researcher in the laboratory of Professor Zetian Mi at UM. Wang took his own life on March 19, 2026, the day after being interrogated by federal agents, jumping from an upper story within the G.G. Brown Laboratory on North Campus. In almost 2 months, President Domenico Grasso and UM administration have issued no statements to the campus community about his passing. It was the WSWS that first reported Wang's name on April 2, informing the broader public of his death. Science has documented the machinery of the witch hunt without confronting its most devastating human consequence. The readership of Science is a scientific establishment, senior faculty, research administrators, funding bodies, and academic institutions. That its editors concluded the time had come to document this campaign in such a detail reflects the depth of alarm spreading through sections of the scientific establishment. They are watching the state attempt to suppress Chinese scientific advances through police state methods and concluding that the damage to American science may be irreparable. The World Socialist website and the International Youth and Students for Social Equality, IYSSE, have opposed this witch hunt from the beginning. We renew our demands. A full independent investigation into the death of Dunhao Wang. The exoneration of all convicted researchers. The restoration of their careers and right of return. An end to visa revocation as a political weapon. The immediate restoration of Roger Innes's laboratory access. An independent investigation into the coordination between the FBI, DOJ, USDA, and the university administrations that have served as willing instruments of this purge. The defence of these scientists is inseparable from the defence of democratic rights for the entire working class and the fight against the imperialist drive to war with China. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Jenny Campbell.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.